Coming up, we got John Gambadoro talking about the KD trade, how it happened, who were the dark horses, what's it mean for the Suns and the Rockets, and then J. Kyle, man, my old friend, joining me to talk NBA draft that's coming up right now. We got breaking news, folks. Kevin Durant has been traded from the Phoenix Suns to the Houston Rockets. And to discuss it, I got John Gambadoro, who's been on top of all this news. John, what's up?
Kev, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing excellent. There's nobody I'd want to talk to more to discuss this than you, John, because you've been on top of this with this KD trade saga every step of the way. You teased this morning that a deal is going to happen either today or tomorrow, and here we are. It officially happened. Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, and the number 10 pick from Houston to Phoenix for Kevin Durant with 5 second round draft picks. How did this come about? What do you think about this? What's your first gut reaction from the Phoenix side of things? What's going on?
Well, there's two ways to look at it. One, would I have liked Jabari Smith in this deal? Absolutely. I would have loved to have Jabari Smith in this deal. But the Phoenix Suns, they get 8 players for a soon-to-be 37-year-old Kevin Durant. 2 starters in Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks. They get the number 10 pick this year, and they get 5 second round picks. This deal, basically, the part of it with Dylan Brooks and Jalen Green and the 10th pick, were kind of agreed upon last night. And then today, they kind of worked out the second round pick portion of it to make sure that the second round picks got in there. So 8 total players for Kevin Durant. Look, you weren't going to get as much for Kevin Durant as you got, you know, years ago when the Suns traded the 5 first rounders and Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder. I think they made the best of the situation. It was time for Kevin Durant to move on. Some people are going to like the trade and some people aren't going to like it. I like Jalen Green. There's no plans to trade Jalen Green or reroute him. I think he could play with Book. He attacks the basket. He doesn't shoot as much as Book, so he likes to attack, which the Suns were one of the worst teams in the NBA at attacking the basket. Brooks gives them an alpha. He gives them a real veteran leader. You'll remember this. Years ago, they thought they were trading for Dylan Brooks, but Memphis said it was Marshawn Brooks, and the whole thing got messed up, and they ended up trading Kelly Oubre the next day. But I was in the middle of that because I was reporting the Suns had traded for Dylan Brooks. Woj was reporting that it was Marshawn Brooks, and they ended up scrapping the deal and just making the deal the next day for Kelly Oubre.
It all comes full circle now again. Him. I mean, look, that was a crazy, crazy couple days or however long it was, couple hours. Look, I think from the Phoenix side of things, I'm disappointed that they didn't get back one of their future picks. Getting number 10 is nice. Getting 5 second round picks is solid. But man, like, you still don't have your 28 or your 29 after all this. After all of this, you don't get either of those back. That to me is like the biggest bummer here. Whereas with like Dylan Brooks, yes, he's an enforcer, but Jalen Green, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, a lot of overlap there. And I like Jalen Green.
Bradley Beal is not going to be on this team. He's not going to be gonna on this team.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Trading him, cutting him? What's going to happen? Extending him?
Trade him, but not Washington. Not Charlotte. Trade him.
Not Charlotte.
They'll look to trade him, or they'll buy him out. And if they trade him, maybe they trade him to a team for another player that they could buy out. But they will either trade him or they will buy him out. I went out on a limb like 3 months ago and said there's a 0% Bradley Beal is going to be back. I'm going to stick with that. I don't think there's any scenario in which Bradley Beal comes back and plays for the Suns.
That helps a little bit. Like Jalen Green is a young guy. He's still at this point 23 years old, turns 24 next year. He's not on the worst contract in the world by any means, his extension kicking in. And for Phoenix at the number 10 pick, they're not just going to take Jace Richardson from Michigan State, are they?
It's a good question. I don't know. We just found out about the picks. The second rounders they got, which I reported, the second round picks from Houston are the Rockets' 2032 pick, Boston's 2030, the number 59 this year, and then 2 second rounders next year. So again,
yes,
the Rockets' 2032 second rounder, Boston's 2030, the 59th pick this year, and then 2 second rounders next year. That's the second rounders. You know what? I haven't done any homework on the 10th pick. Look, they're always going to get a pick back this year, whether they were dealing with Miami, Minnesota, Toronto, San Antonio, 9, 10, 14, 17. We always knew they were going to get a pick back this year. I understand your point. Like, that's why they didn't want to tank. That's why getting, you know, guys that could play and play now and try to win and try to get to the play-in tournament is the goal, not to be in the lottery and, you know, and have a because you don't have your pick. There's no use being in the lottery when you don't have your picks. So the goal was to try to be competitive and try to win some basketball games. They know they're not going to win anything big in the next couple of years. They know that. But you had to start over. Kevin Durant, it didn't work. It didn't work. Addition by subtraction. Beal's got to go. Durant, it wasn't worth keeping him. They had to start over.
Look, I think for Phoenix, it's the type of issue here where a lot of people believe they should have done everything possible to get their own picks back. There are others who believe that the Suns, you know, I think internally they believe this clearly with their decision, just continue competing. It's not about just getting your picks back. They want to have other teams' picks, perhaps, but not their own. They want to focus on winning and possibly benefit from other picks. So it's about different philosophies here. Phoenix has never prioritized getting their picks back. This is what I reported earlier in the year. You've talked about this as well. They didn't want their own picks back. That wasn't the priority here. I think the fact that the deal happened with Houston, that's where I'm like, maybe it would have been at least a little nice to get your own picks back in this scenario. But ultimately, they're favoring what is the best deal on the table. Was there anybody else who was competitive? Like, was there a good offer from Minnesota, a good offer from San Antonio? Minnesota, what were they offering?
Rudy Gobert. This is what I believe. Now, this is what I believe the offer to be. How much changed on Durant not wanting to go there? That we're not 100% sure on. But I believe Minnesota would have been Rudy Gobert, Dante DiVincenzo, one of the young players, either Shannon or Dillingham, and then their first-round pick, which is, what was their pick this year? Was it 14 or 17? I can't remember. But whichever Minnesota's pick was this year, they would have got that. So Rudy Gobert, Dante DiVincenzo, who they almost drafted the year they got Mikal Bridges. They were going to draft Dante DiVincenzo, but they made the trade and got Mikal. Then one of the younger players, Shannon or Denny Dillingham, not sure which one, but one of the two. And then Minnesota's pick this year, which I think is 17, but you could correct me if I'm wrong. I think that was a good offer. But I think KD probably, like the Golden State deal, sent through back channels I'll go there, but there's no guarantee I'm going to resign with you. There's no guarantee. Now, whether Minnesota was willing to do that deal without a guarantee from KD or not, I'm not sure. I don't know. I think the Minnesota offer was really good. I always liked the Minnesota offer. The Miami offer was junk. And there's a lot of really, like, no fan base irks me more than the Heat fan base. Not all of them, but some of them. They're so ridiculous. And I don't think the Miami, but I never believed the Miami offer was that good. Like, so they all thought they were going to get KD, and I never had KD going to Miami. So they jumped all over me, you know, but I've been right about so many Miami stories before, Beal and Dame and other things, but I don't think the Miami offer was good. Toronto, I think part of it may have been was Jakob Poeltl in the deal or not? Because I don't know if the Suns would have wanted RJ Barrett. And Toronto had to pick this year too, I think 9. But I liked the Minnesota offer. I would have loved the Houston offer. It was Jabari Smith was in there. But I could live with two starters, Dylan Brooks and Jalen Green, the 10th pick this year, could be a good player. And then you take a lottery on the 5 second round picks, which you could always trade or not. So I'm not saying like this is an A for the Suns or a B+ or anything like that. I think they made the best out of the situation they could. They got back a couple of starters, and they got back 6 draft picks for a guy that's going to be 37, and they had no intention of resigning.
Were there any, so like Shams Charania was pretty consistent in talking about, mystery suitors, these dark horses, wild cards. Were there any wild cards that you knew of that made solid offers for KD?
I think the teams that we knew about were Miami, Houston, San Antonio, and then Minnesota, Toronto. And who am I missing there? So any San Antonio, but Minnesota, the Clippers. The Clippers. It. The Clippers were in on it too.
The Clippers.
So that's the six that were in on it.
And there's nobody else.
I'm not sure. I think there might have been something to Cleveland having a little bit of interest as one of the wild card teams. I can't be 100% with you on that, but I wouldn't be shocked if when people said there's a wild card team, there's somebody out there that's a wild card team. I wouldn't be shocked if that ends up being the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just keep your eye on that.
Interesting. I mean, I do think Cleveland's a team that would be looking to make some big moves this offseason, splitting up Garland Mitchell in the backcourt, possibly splitting up Allen and Mobley in the front court as well, keeping Mobley and Mitchell, but there's other guys very movable. Yeah. So Cleveland's an interesting one, and it does possibly indicate that they could be making some other big moves.
Would have probably been, that would have been like the three-way, four-way deal that people were speculating on. But everybody had said there was a wild card. I believe there was a wild card. And without giving you like certainly, hey, it was, I would just say that I wouldn't be shocked if Cleveland was possibly the wild card, you know, that maybe had some interest or not. Again, I can't say with certainty, but a lot of people were speculating on a wild card. I was too. To me, that might be a team that you could explore whether they kick the tires on them or not.
Do you fully expect the Suns to keep the number 10 pick and use it, or could they look to flip that elsewhere?
Yeah, the speculation right now, like there's even reports out there the Suns are going to reroute Jalen Green, and I'm reporting that it's not. That's not true. Their plan is to keep Jalen Green and Dylan Brooks. Their plan is not to reroute Jalen Green. It is all over social media right now that they're going to reroute Jalen Green. They're not. The plan is to keep Jalen Green, and the plan is to keep the 10th pick. Look, they got to let go of a lot of players that were on the team last year, and they need to replace those players with younger, cheaper options because they're still above the second apron. They're going to get under it. Like, the goal is to get under the second apron. I believe they will get under the second apron, and I do think Beal is going to be gone, and that could help a lot. But they need to replace, you think about all the guys, there's five or six guys on the roster that aren't going to be here. They need to replace those players. So the draft picks, younger, cheaper talent is the way they're going to do it.
Look, I think it makes sense because they'll at least be competitive. Like you said, compete for the play-in. It's pretty realistic here with what would actually happen. They're not a contender. They're not up there in the Western Conference. And that does lead to the question here, though. Is Devin Booker going to be patient with all of this? Is he willing to stick this out and see the Suns improve? Is your indication that Devin Booker is going to be patient here and not be demanding a trade a year from now?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody really close with Book that played with him and said to me, look, there's no assurances. He's a star here. He's the superstar. He's the face of the franchise. There's no assurances that if he goes somewhere else, he'll have that. There's no assurances that he could go to another. I want out. He goes somewhere else and maybe it doesn't work out. I mean, look at Kevin Durant. Look at how many times it hasn't worked out for Kevin Durant. So like
a lot.
And I was speaking to somebody very, very close with Book who said that like he doesn't want to leave. He loves it here. He's got a lot of ties here. They're both taking good care of him. He has no intention to leave. I think the timeline is that
Book's going to go out. Right? He wants to be like, you know, Kobe, like one team, one franchise his whole career is what I think he wants to be.
We had it here with Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald with the Cardinals spent his whole career here. So we know what that's like. Yeah. So I think Booker wants to be here. I think Booker expects that it's going to be rough going for the next couple of years, but that the plan is to try to be competitive, you know, try to be a play-in tournament team. That's their goal. I got to be honest with you, Kev. I think they're going to be better this year than they were last year. I do. I think it takes
possible.
I don't think it takes a lot. They were 10 games under 500 last year. I think without Durant,
it's Beal, a low bar.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm making lunch bets with people. I think they'll have more wins next year than they did this year. And that's without Durant and Beal. I think that they will. It's not a high bar to set. You know, this will be Booker's team now. No more. Now, there are other things that they have to do. Right? Tyus Jones is going to be gone, and Monty Morris is going to be gone. And a lot of these players are going to be gone. And they need to redo the roster a little bit more. But they added two starters from the team that was the second best team in the Western Conference this year. take it as you will, but they did. They took two starters off the Rockets and added them here to the Phoenix Suns roster. I think they'll be a better team this year than last year. That doesn't mean they're going to be the 4 seed or the 5 or the 6 seed, but I wouldn't be surprised that they're a play-in tournament team.
It wouldn't shock me necessarily either, depending on what else happens. Like we'll see, right. Like, is San Antonio going to make additions, or is Portland going to try to get better? Like, these other teams in the Western Conference, are they going to try to get good, or is Phoenix going to be in that 8-9-10 conversation for the play-in? From the Houston side of things here, you just watched Kevin Durant for a couple of years in Phoenix, 37 years old, 1 year remaining on his contract. What do you expect from him at this stage of his career? Does KD have a lot left to give at a high winning level, or is Houston just a buy and low here and wishing that there's something left with KD?
I just sent KD a message just to say, hey, listen, I know we haven't always been on the best of terms, me and you, but man, I really did enjoy watching him play here. And I think that he is one of the greatest players I've ever seen. And everybody says that, but I really wish him so much success and happiness. I really do. Kevin Durant is, I know he's, people always talk about how emotional he gets over social media comments and how invested he is. He cares about himself. He cares about his legacy. He cares about his future. He never took games off. He played his ass off here. He really did. And I respect Kevin Durant, and I've had my odds with him going back and forth. You know, we've been at odds at times, but I really did enjoy watching him play. And I didn't see a lot of slippage from Kevin Durant. A little bit, of course. He's 37 and, you know, but the right team around him, like Houston, I think he's going to crush it there. You got Van Vliet. You've got the defensive players in Houston. You've got other guys that could score. I think he's just going to go there and be able to be himself. And I think he's really going to help. Remember watching those playoff games? At the end of the last 5 minutes of the game, it was with Şengün just trying to dribble around two guys and throw up a shot that wasn't going in. Like, they don't have to worry about that anymore. Kevin Durant is the greatest shot maker we've seen. He's going to fit in so well right there. And they've got a lot of the glue pieces between Thompson and Van Vliet and Şengün and Eason that are going to allow him to just be himself. It's going to allow Kevin Durant to be himself and just go get big time buckets, get those baskets at the end of the shot clock, at the end of the game. I think this is a great move for the Rockets because I think he still is going to play at a really high level for the next 3 years.
I think it's an absolute no-brainer for the Rockets and for Kevin Durant. This might be best-case scenario. Of all the teams that were on his list, Houston, San Antonio, Miami, and all those teams that like made some type of offer, Minnesota, Miami, maybe Cleveland, as you said earlier, LA Clippers, we'll see there. But like ultimately, Houston has the elite defense. They have the rising young team. Şengün's still getting better. He should improve from this run that they just had this past year. And they have all these gritty dog defenders. Depth, exactly. A great coach in Ime Udoka. This is a great situation for KD to fall into. And he adds exactly what they need. And they still have enough assets to go get more and further bolster that team. And the window is open. It's open. Houston definitely has a shot next season. So I think for Kevin Durant, this might be the first post-Golden State team that actually might find itself in a championship next season. So I'm happy for KD too. And as you said, he's still so good. At worst, he's still one of the 25 best players in the game. At best, he's still one of the 10 best. He's still an awesome player. And so for the Rockets, even if he gets a little worse after an extension the next 2 years, he's still going to be really good. He's still going to be really good for the Houston
Rockets. They held on to Whitmore, and they held on to Whitmore, and they held on to Shepard, and they held on to Eason. I think the Rockets made a good deal. I think the Rockets made a good deal. And I don't think this is a terrible deal for the Suns. I think the Suns got two starters back because they want to be competitive, and they got 8 players overall for Kevin Durant, and they got a top 10 pick back. They got this year's top 10 pick. So I think the Suns did a decent job. I wouldn't say like this is an A for the Suns, but I don't think it's a bad deal for the Suns. I think they made the best deal that they could make, and they had to make a deal. They had to move on from Kevin Durant. They had to. This was the best offer. I like the Minnesota offer, but I think this is a good offer that will help the Phoenix Suns be a better basketball team next year and give them some avenues to be better down the road with 6 draft picks. Only 1 first round, about 5 second round, which, you know, Kevin, you can always take those second rounders and use them for trades. You can always trade two. Second round picks are always traded. So now that they've got more ammunition to make trades down the road if they want to do that. So I think all in all, the Phoenix Suns did all right.
Well, Gabo, I started out this conversation feeling like the Suns got fleeced. I feel a lot better now because, like, it's just my first gut reaction. I was too emotional. I feel better about it now for the Suns than I did prior to our conversation. I still feel awesome about it for Houston, though.
Two starters back, both in their 20s, a top 10 pick this year, five shots with the second rounder.
They need a dog like Dylan Brooks. They need a guy like that. Jalen Green, who knows? Maybe Jalen Green changes scenery becomes a good thing for him.
Everybody thinks he can't play with Brooks. Well, if they made a deal with San Antonio, they were going to get Vassell. There were a lot of guards. Jalen Green is different than I think he's different because I'm always seeing him attack the basket, attack the basket, attack the basket. Brook doesn't attack the basket that much. The Suns don't attack the basket that much. Look it up. They were like one of the worst teams in the league at attacking the basket. Jalen Green will help them there. I do like Jalen Green. Again, would I have loved Jabari Smith? Absolutely. I don't want to make this seem like, oh my God, I would have loved Jabari Smith, a 6'10 power forward at his age, but they weren't able to get him. But Brooks is going to help them a lot, being an alpha and a leader. And Jalen Green is again, a young developing kid who I happen to like. So again, I think they did okay here. They did decent. I'm not going to give him an A or B+. But I don't think the Suns did terrible in this deal.
Yeah. They get a B-. That's what I'll give it. Gambo, thanks for joining me. Okay. I appreciate it.
All right. You got it, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. To talk a little bit more about the KD news and then a bunch of NBA draft talk, it's my old colleague, Jay Kyleman. Now joining me is my old friend from The Ringer, Jay Kyleman. What up, Kyle?
What's going on, man? Long time no see.
I know. Likewise, man. What a day for us to record. We said 2 p.m. on Sunday. KD gets traded at like 12:40 p.m. on Sunday. Just talked with John Gambadoro, from big Phoenix radio host, and we talked about a little bit on both sides. But Kyle, before we get into some draft stuff, I want to get your first opinion. I have not thought at all. What should the Suns do with the number 10 pick? They get the 10th pick now, week of the draft. What's your first gut feeling? What should they be targeting here with the 10th pick?
Oh, man. I mean, the kind of theme that I had been sticking with for them in the, I guess, what is it, 23 that they have? Or no, it's later than that. I'm bad with the exact numbers. Their later first that they have, I was thinking, you know, for a team that is fully
29,
bound up.
29. Yeah. They have.
Fully bound up and without options to sort of bring talent in, I thought that they should go for, you know, they're in need of some stability going forward, and they need to, I figured my logic was they need to draft an adult. So I had them taking Ryan Kalfgrinner there because I think Kalfgrinner is going to be a high floor, a stable guy, you know, he's probably going to play mostly drop coverage, but he has roller gravity. He makes layups. It's a simple proposition. That's what I would say about him, but I think it's a stable one. And then, you know, but with this 10th pick, I think they can still keep that mindset with 29, but with the 10th pick now, I had Houston taking Noah Senge there because, you know, Senge has such a wide range of enthusiasts, and I'm on the skeptical side with him, but there are people who are genuine believers, and I think you could leverage that. That was my thinking if Houston were to push this through the draft, if it had extended through the draft, and they had waited, I thought that they could dangle him because of the believers that he has. But now that they have the pick, I'm like, I could see it going a number of ways. You know, they could, I don't know that if you're thinking about, do you want to stack another guy who is a big athletic switchy wing guy who might have some dissonance with Ryan Dunn? I still like Ryan Dunn. Maybe you go with a Carter Bryant because he kind of fits with the shooters, or do you go ahead and go for, you know, you're talking about the stability. Now you have a chance to do an upside kind of a swing. I saw somebody suggest Yegor Demon there. Demon is another one who has wide ranges. But you know, he's somebody that does have playmaking upside. If he does get to be sort of an okay shooter, he could be a valuable, he's probably never going to be a primary. I'm sure we'll break out and talk more about this specifically, but you generally, I think they could maybe pivot and to have more of an upside mindset with that 10th pick. What do you think?
I don't know. And I don't know because they don't want to be bad. They want to be competitive. And so like they don't get either of their future picks back. They get their own pick back, the 10th pick, but not either of the future picks that Houston still has. Gambo says, and he's right about this, They want to be competitive. They want to be in the play-in. They want to just kind of straddle the middle now and then get good in a couple of years. So in that sense, maybe you're right about an upside swing. But I also think they want somebody who checks the helps us now box, not the Noah Senge mystery box. Don't know what he's going to be. He could be a bust. He could be a superstar type of player. I don't expect that, even with Carter Bryant. Solid role player, probably in all likelihood, but I'm not so sure that he's going to be a guy who helps a lot as a rookie or in his second year. He's more of a still a raw project. He gets in foul trouble at this stage of his career too at Arizona this past year. So I'm thinking a big still because I don't like the big man market for
it's awful.
Free agents. It's terrible.
It's really bad.
It's really bad if in free agency. It's like maybe you go get Clint Capela at his age, but I don't know. I don't know about Capela necessarily at this stage of his career. So to me, maybe rather than getting the big at number 29, like I always had Kalkbrenner in some of my mock drafts in recent months as well. Maybe at number 10, you instead look at Derek Queen, Thomas Sorber, Malawach, if he were to fall to 10, which I don't think he will, like maybe you look at it big at 10 and then at 29, you instead take a guard, wing, forward type of player at that point. Because there are a lot of them at number 29 as well. Like, I mean, like maybe Drake Powell's there at that point. Rashear Fleming, Jameer Watkins, like whoever it is, if you want to reach a little bit on a guy, a second rounder, whoever it might be at number 29, you know, Noah Penda, right? Maybe go for Penda at 29. So maybe at 10, you go for a big, because I like the bigs available at 10.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends on who's there. If you're going to, that was a great one. Swish, Kyle.
Well, that's a good one.
I think that if they took Sorber, they could really disrupt the plans because OKC in San Antonio, I don't feel like Sorber's going to get past them. So, I mean, if they find out that they do like them, but I don't know that San Antonio or OKC are going to be
so
dug in.
OKC, San Antonio with Sorber?
That's been, I mean, I've heard that whispered from a few different places. I as I understand it, San Antonio really likes him and OKC does as well. So that's
my expectation. Little too big action.
Yeah. Probably backup big, I would imagine. Give them some depth. You could figure some. I think what's on the San Antonio side, yeah, you'd have to figure some things out in terms of spacing because he's not a spacer yet, but he is very switchable. I think Phoenix and Sorber is interesting. I don't know, but do you want to go ahead? Because do you want to take if they're not going to take, you know, keep Jalen Green, or if they are going to keep Jalen Green the way that I've heard?
Gambo believes they are going to keep Jalen Green. He said on the podcast, they're going to get rid of Bradley Beal. Beal is either going to get bought out or traded to a team he's going to waive his no trade clause for. That's Gambo's expectation. And Gambo has been on top of everything with the Suns this whole offseason, as he always is. So if that is the truth with what happens, Beal gone, Jalen Green, Devin Booker front court. You got Ryan Dunn. Now you have Dylan Brooks. You got Cody Martin, like you got a number of wings and forwards. Royce O'Neal's still there. Maybe they try to trade him. Maybe they try to trade Grayson Allen, as I've reported they might look to do. But you still have zero bigs, except for Oso. But he's not necessarily a long-term starter at that point. And Bol Bol. Bol Bol's Bol Bol. I love him, but he's Bol Bol. So,
just like, as good as Wimby, right?
Yep. Just as good as Victor Wembanyama.
Does all the same things. Yeah, he does all the same things. Tell me the difference.
75% of the way there. But no, I think a big for them at number 10 makes a lot of sense. Is there a preference you'd have for Phoenix? Let's say it is a big. Derek Queen, Thomas Sorber, one of those two. We'll eliminate Malawach because in all likelihood he'll be off the board at that point. Either of them, would you be disappointed with Derek Queen there, or do you think that's a fine selection?
I mean, I would think that Queen would be, he'll give you something. I mean, Queen always figures it out. He has a way of figuring things out. I kind of wonder defensively if they're thinking about being, he would be a long-term play. If we're sticking with the upside swing, you know, defensively, I think it's going to take him a little bit to keep his head above water in the NBA. But I think him with Booker and Green is interesting. I just kind of wonder if he's going to be there or not. You know, Brooklyn is an interesting one for me with Derek Queen. That's where I have him going in our mock that's coming out on Monday, I guess, or tomorrow. Yeah, I mean, I also like Sorber's upside, I think, is pretty good, man. I mean, like, I think that he's going to be defensively pretty good, probably earlier than Queen. I think that he's a good passer. Queen's probably is a more creative passer. I just think Sorber is going to be a winning player. So, you know, if you're keeping that mindset of, like, staying towards trying to get yourself to the middle in the near future, I think Sorber makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I love Sorber. And so for the Houston side of things in this deal, getting Kevin Durant obviously helps them now. They address a lot of the issues with the team, add a dynamic shooter, a dynamic creator, huge addition for them. What do you think is next for the Rockets? What are they missing at this point? Who should they be looking to flip? What should their priorities be after getting Kevin Durant?
Oh, gosh. If you're looking at, I mean, in the offseason, my thinking for them was we just really need to add the quality decision making wherever we can. You know, from the reaction on the Phoenix side, our friend Sam Cooper did not seem happy with the haul, the return. if I were in their position, I would have maybe wanted to get one of these guys who are viewed as more than winning players, like the Jabari or somebody like that. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of where my mind is. That's why I kind of repeatedly, I kept trying to drift away from, you know, Jakachonis was a guy I'd had mock there. Just someone who can give them not necessarily a primary ball handler. I think we can kind of assume that the primary touches are spoken for Houston, but somebody that can up their quality of decision-making as you go kind of down the line. So, I'm honestly pretty relieved to not be thinking about what they were going to do with that pick. I was so sick of mocking the Houston pick. I was just like, they're not going to keep it. I was like, they
nothing
can't
made
play
sense.
Yeah,
no, nobody made sense. On my end of things, it's like you mentioned Jakachonis. I think in my mock I have going up tomorrow, I had him going to Houston as well at 10, but I'm like, I don't know, they didn't play Reed Shepherd at all. They're gonna play him. Just, I don't see it.
So yeah, I mean, Jakachonis to me, like I said, he probably would be a bit like a rotation guy, like a late rotation guy for them. But yeah, relieved to not think about that one anymore. So I don't know. I mean, I assume another quality decision maker, whether or not that's a because they've got their switchability and everything, their rim protection. Do you think they need, well, Steven Adams has been playing well for them. I'd assume it'd be one more ball handler decision maker. What do you think?
I think so. I think one more ball handler / decision maker, one more shooter as well. Now, what are you giving up to make those improvements? That's the tough question for me there. Like, do you believe Reed Shepherd can be one of those ball handlers, creators, and one of those shooters in his second season? He showed some major flashes in the second half of the year for them. He was outstanding in the G League. I'd like to see Reed Shepherd get those opportunities. Maybe he becomes that guy in his second season for them. So I think that's one possible solution for them. But going out and getting one other wing guy, like filling that Dylan Brooks, those minutes, is kind of my thought. Is how do you fill those minutes? You're not going to fill that personality with who he is necessarily, but you get a bunch of dogs already. Amen Thompson is that. Tari Eason is that. Like in his own way, Şengün and Van Vliet are that. Like Dylan Brooks is Dylan Brooks. But they have a lot of dogs on that team. So I don't think they're going to lose their identity. Ime Udoka, their head coach, is a dog so in a lot of ways. And so I think with Houston, that's the priority here is how do you fill those minutes, right? Like this whole team is full of dogs. And so I think for the Rockets, that's going to be the priority at this point is how do you use some of these future picks and or extra young players to make those improvements? Let's talk draft, Kyle. I want to talk draft, general draft. That's originally why we were going to record here. Number one question on my mind for you. Who's the player you worry that you're too low on?
Ooh, that's a good one. The guys that I've had a hard time like falling fully in love with, you know, Nolan Traore is a guy. The guys that I've been lower on, Asa Newell is a guy that I've always had a hard time with. I mean, I've gone through, you go through cycles, phases of this where you revisit things and reassess, be like, what did I miss? Was I too, did I not account for things here? Murray Boyles is a guy initially that I was like, I have been dinging him too much. Like my faith in him figuring it out has kind of strengthened, I think, when I circle back. I've been lower on Rashear Fleming throughout the process and I did a circle back on him and confirmed my feelings. I was just like, every time this guy dribbles against the closeout, it is like, I was joking with somebody. I was like, if there was some supervillain that said, all right, Kyle, I'm going to decide your fate based on how this Rashear Fleming closeout attack goes, I'd be like, well, it's been a nice life. I'm dead. You just can't dribble. And it's amazing if you look at his shot chart and his analytics and stuff, and you're like, oh, it's so clean. It's like, oh, he's switchable and he hits threes. And I'm like, man, there's one glaring weakness. The moment people make him bounce it, it's going to be a problem. And then Jace Richardson is somebody that I'm having a hard time with. I'll talk to people who have him in the top 10, and I'm like, he's 6 feet tall. Like, I know that he can shoot the ball, and I worry about, can you be more, if you're not going to be an electric elite playmaker creator, if you look at the way, like, even a Darius Garland runs into a wall in the playoffs, and he is worlds better as a shooter and a passer and a ball handler than Jace. He's somebody that concerns me that maybe I'm making a mistake being too conservative on, but he butts up against my philosophies pretty hard.
I think those are some good ones. For me, Yegor Demin is the one that I can't get there with. The shooting, under 70% from the free throw line, doesn't have great touch on layups, floaters, 27% on dribble jumper twos, 24% on dribble jumper threes, 27% on catch and shoot threes. The first step, we saw him at times having trouble turning the corner, creating great separation, lack of burst off the dribble. I think he's going to be a solid player because he's 6'8", 6'9". He can handle. He's a magnificent passer. I think he's going to be a solid defender once he really grows into his own physically. But the shooting, the creation, I'm like, yeah, I'll take him in the late teens or 20s, but mid-late lotto, I can't get there with Demin. I know that's a guy you're a lot higher on than I am. Like, what are you seeing in him that I might not be?
I mean, I have him mocked at 19. He's definitely in the teens.
Your board,
for me.
Though. Where is he on your board?
On my board at this point, I have him at 17.
Okay, so you did move him down a bit.
Yeah, it's... You know me, I'm a little bit of an indecisive
person.
You had
him at 11. 11 on the current public board, yes.
Yeah. I mean, the concerns that you're talking about are very real. I mean, there are some quality players. There are a lot of guys in this class that have a high likelihood of one of their middle or high outcome becoming a reality, in my point. So I don't think that that's a total damnation of him. But if you look at his skill set, I mean, yeah, he's I've said this over and over again, that he is the most creative processor of the floor and creative passer. But it's like, that's wonderful. But if you can't, you know, if you can't balance that with the threat to score, we see this with Josh Giddey, who had problems with this at times. I just think he struggles to score even more than Josh. Josh at least has paint game where he can get in there with his little runners, floaters, push shots, whatever it is. And he's bigger and stronger. Yegor has no choice but to get a lot stronger. He's going to have to become a pace player who can own his space on the floor. I feel like he was on his heels a lot. He was off balance a lot because of that, because of how skinny. And, man, the moment Big 12 play started, I mean, the book was out. I mean, people were just getting him on. Ole Miss kind of was the first team in Providence. And he had a knee injury, too, which hurt him. But, yeah, the shooting... You see him shooting in the workouts, man, and it's just like, it's hard to believe it because we've seen so much, you know, of those struggles against quality college competition.
Who's the guy you're higher on than anybody?
Oh, man. I mean, it was LeBaron Fialon when he pulled out of the draft. let's see. Who have I bumped up recently? I've moved Penda up. I've moved Behringer up because I was rewatching a lot of the Behringer stuff. And I was like, this and everything that you hear about him, like the intel about his personality is great. And then I'm higher on Adu, I think. I think Adu is just going to produce Adu Thierro, but he's still in the 20s for me. I'm just confident about he's just going to come in, and he's the best rebounder in his position in this class.
Was Carter Barnes on your board?
Carter was the one that I moved up, I felt like, before most people that I was ahead on. So,
I think he's still the one. I haven't seen anybody, at least publicly, on your board. You have him 6. I think that's the highest of anywhere that I've seen, personally.
He's 8 right now on ours, 8. But that's okay. Still high. He's going to be on the update. So, yeah, I just... I think he's going to be able to switch like one through maybe even four at times. Like, and he's strong and has good hands and he's a good athlete and he's a smart kid. I mean, you just listen to him talk about playing defense and stuff. And I bet on guys like that. So, and he's going to hit open shots.
Now, here's my thing. And I like Carter Bryant. I don't love Carter Bryant. And it's like, you kind of set it in the context of Rashear Fleming. When it comes to like attacking a closeout, Carter Bryant can pull up. He can do some of that. But in the half court, only 15.9% of his shots are at the rim. He does not get to the basket. He does not turn the corner. He is not a great finisher when it comes to those situations. So with Carter Bryant, I wonder, is he just 3-and-D perimeter guy who can pull up a little bit and can obviously hit open threes? He was on fire to close the season in the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament for Arizona. And he definitely is going to be a really, really good defender. But I just wonder, like, is there that next level with him for me to take him in the top 10 versus some of these other guys? Like, I think Carter Bryant is closer to late teens than top 10 in my eyes. Like, what am I missing there in your opinion?
I think he's shown more in terms, I mean, he's younger than Rashear, and I think he's shown more to me in the past to make me think like, he could get to the point where maybe he can, I trust him to connect those dots more than I do Rashear.
I'm just mentioning your point about Rashear. Carter's his own player, but like with Carter specifically, I just don't know if he has that extra level as a creator to warrant the eighth pick for Brooklyn or the ninth pick for Toronto. To me, I think he's a lot closer to like Drake Powell in that level of prospects in the 20s or 30s than he is to some of these guys in the top five, top 10 range, in my opinion. Now, I like him, but I just don't love him. I think he's going to be a good role player. I want to make that clear. I just don't know if I see that level of higher upside.
Couple things. I think it comes down to the separator is how much do you buy the shooting as opposed to if just using those two other guys is just a benchmark to separate here, because you have to look at it that way if you're going to rank him that high. I'd buy the shooting with Carter more than I do with Rashear and with Drake. Drake's shooting I'm a little worried about. That's way more of a question mark for me. And also, I don't think you have to hold everybody to the standard of are they going to be a creator, because I think he's going to be able to. He's a smart enough cutter spatially. He's a great athlete. I think once you get him on a floor, he was playing with guards too that were had a little more scoring tilt to them. I just think I trust him to be that. I think that he's going to be, he doesn't have to become a creator. I don't expect him to become a creator. And that's fine. I think he's going to be, he can be a one dribble pull up guy. I think he'll be a transition athlete. That's fine. Whereas with those other guys, I'm less sure about that. I'm more confident about it with Carter.
I think for me, Cedric Coward, he's going to end up seventh on my board, is probably the one I'm higher on than most people, but a lot of people are also high on him at this point, similar to you with your Carter Bryant experience. Thomas Sorber, I have him ranked 10th. I have him ranked ahead of Derek Queen, ahead of Kaman Malawach. To me, I think Thomas Sorber brings the best of both worlds. He's not quite the level defensively as Malawach. He's not quite the level offensively as Derek Queen, but he's the best all around of those bigs in that range. And plus, I think he's really freaking good as a passer, man. Like, he's not like as stylish as Derek Queen as a ball handler and all that, but with what you want from a big man, connective piece, DHOs, passing out of like a post-up after sealing off a smaller defender, off the offensive boards, making the smart decision. Like, I think he does a lot of those connective things offensively on top of the fact that he has a massive 7'6" wingspan, gonna finish with space around the basket. He can post up if necessary. That's primarily what he did at Georgetown. He can do that if necessary in the NBA. And then defensively, they were like 28 points per 100 possessions better defensively with Sorber on the floor. Like, he is just so good with his hands, intercepting those passes. Like, he's not quick laterally on the perimeter, but he's very agile in small spaces, and he has like elite hand-eye coordination, just a whoop, snatch balls, deflect them out of the air. And I just think he's really freaking good all around. And so that's why I give him the slight edge over both Derek Queen and over Kaman Malawach. Do you think that's an outrageous perspective to take?
No, I'm probably more worried about Malawach. That's another one that I would put in there. I definitely look at him and I'm like, I keep, you know, you just rearrange and stuff, like you find yourself doing that, and Malawach will just kind of get pushed down in the rearranging. I'll be like, oh my God, Malawach
that happens
is
to me.
He's at 16 too. And then I'll be like, how do I feel about that? I feel the girl trying kombucha meme where she's like, you know, they're doing the faces. And I'm like, I can't, he is gigantic. I mean, right now, I mean, I have, speaking to Sorber specifically, I definitely think there is a very likely world where he ends up being better at Queen than what, for the reasons that you're talking about. But the upside of the creation and the passing, I had to put him one spot ahead of Sorber for now. Malawach, I have it at 13. So yeah, I'm kind of with you where, and a lot of people think that's insane. So Danny Chow, you know, our my buddy that our former colleague, he is higher on Malawach than I am. And that's one of the ones that I'm like, I worry about Malawach.
Now, those rankings in the draft guide, are they an aggregate ranking, you and Danny average, or are they your rankings?
They're mine. But okay. Danny's, I'm sure he's going to put his out. So, and we talk and I try to, you know, get input from that and stuff too. But yeah, I took ownership. So if they're wrong and they're bad, blame me. Don't blame Danny.
Is there a prospect that you're higher on now than you were at the start of the NBA playoffs, after everything we've seen with the physicality and the speed and Indiana and OKC advancing to the finals? Like, who are you higher on now than you were in the middle of April? Might be nobody.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty tight. I try to think about those things throughout the year. I mean, the way that it's probably had the reverse effect. Like, the way it's been officiated has made me dig in a little more on what I was saying with like Jace and things like that. Like, those guys just get swallowed up. Yeah.
And, because you have Jeremiah Fears, at least. Where is he going to be on your board?
That's one that I'm very, I've been lower at you speaking. That's another one that I've been lower on throughout the year. I have him at 21 right now. Okay.
And then where's Jace Richardson at this point then?
23.
Okay. So two small guards outside of the top 20, and a lot of people have them. Jeremiah Fears, some people have them top 5, most people have them top 10. Jace Richardson, as you said, some people have them like 10 to 14, others closer to the teens, a little closer to where you do. What is it about this postseason that has you kind of just shying away from them and saying, somebody else take him? I don't want him on my team. Somebody else can take him, and I'm okay being wrong if it happens.
It can be very tough just because you can have a dual thing going on. I had this going on with Filon before he pulled out, where I was just like, I love him so much. But I'm like, the weak link thing that goes on in the NBA playoffs is so merciless. And it resigns guys, unless you are, you just kind of, even Jalen Brunson, who's an elite, you know, primary, you know, people go switch hunting with him too. So it's just like, you have to be a certain level of incredible offensively to sort of cover for that. And that's tough. That's a really, really tough standard, you know.
I think it's true. On the flip side, TJ McConnell is his own outlier type of player with the energy and the defense that he plays. He's his own guy, undrafted to being a key player in the postseason for the Pacers. But for Jace Richardson specifically, I do think he's got a little bit of that dog in him. Like, I think he's got that grit, that intensity, where he can lean into that in his career, on top of being a knockdown shooter, a guy who can make plays in the mid-range, who can make the right pass. And by the way, like, finished at an elite rate for Michigan State this past season. It's not like he was terrible. He's got all these quirky little flip shots, using English off the glass. With Jeremiah Fears, he's more of that traditional creator, like in the Darius Garland context of small guard. But Jace Richardson, I think he can be different things for you, even though he's only 6 feet tall. And so I think there's still
and
a
he's
role
the wingspan
for,
too.
Yeah, he's yeah. long. I think there's a role for small guys still. It's just the threshold is so high. Because, like, we see it with Garland on Cleveland. Like, there's a reason why they could be looking to flip him this offseason. As good as he was, as good as he can be, there's just something about being that tiny in the postseason that can be a limiting factor for your ceiling as a player. And so I've lowered a little bit on Fears after the postseason, and Richardson I'm a little bit lower on as well, but I still have both those guys as lottery picks. I mean, to me, like, the guys that I've been higher on is like Elijah Martin out of Florida. Mm-hmm. He's only 6'2", but he plays like he's 6'6".
With he's an MF-er, man.
He just nonstop. He just keeps going and going. The speed and the tenacity he plays with. I just think like that's like the postseason, it's always more physical. But this year in particular, I think seeing the way Indiana played throughout would just start to finish in these games. They are full throttle. They don't stop playing fast in fourth quarters. It's not always about the game slows down with them. Just the speed and the intensity and the physicality. To me, Elijah Martin, we saw it with Florida with their run. We saw it with Florida Atlantic as well before he transferred. The dude's an MF-er, as you said. I just think he's a winner, man. I just think he's going to be a winner. And so I've skyrocketed him up into the 30s on my board. I just think the dudes can play. And even if he's not like a knockdown shooter, and even if he's not a traditional guard, he can just makes a winning impact, dude. I mean, to me, that's the number one guy on my board that's probably risen the most.
Yeah, I've been very defensive of that Florida group because people have just kind of assumed that, you know, they're reloading the, not to make this a college basketball thing, but more just a testament to how good those guards were, because Walter Clayton ties into that, obviously, because he was their star player. But Martin was a big part of it. And I just think whenever people have assumed that their bigs are your back and they're going to be awesome, but people have just kind of assumed that that's an easily replaceable thing. And Martin, you know, has done it at two stops now. And Clayton is another guy, too, that I've just kind of, he is smaller as well, you know, but his shot making, I feel like, is something that separates him a little bit, where I think that he's probably going to be like a late rotation guy. I've moved him up to 19.
Do we have the same rank? I think on my current board, I have him. Let's see. I'm pretty sure we might have the same rank for Walter Clayton. I've got Walter Clayton currently 19 on my board.
Yeah. Lockstep. I have the Heat taking him, actually, because I thought, okay. I was just like, I just think that it could work. I've heard there's mutual interest there, so we'll see. The Heat have been obviously really mysterious, but I don't know. I could see them also like going for like a Will Riley and surprising us. I don't know. We'll see. He's one that I think is an interesting case because he was so inefficient in these specific areas. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but throughout the year, you're just kind of betting on. You look at him and you're like, he's got some like self-creation tools. He's obviously a big athletic cutter when he wants to be. We saw that later in the year. He's somebody that I think could be interesting because if he had come back, that like pre-draft conversation is always interesting with him, you know, if he'd come back for a sophomore year, would he have been pushing lottery? You know, I don't know. He's somebody that I think could be a nice value pick if it's around that 20-ish kind of pick right there.
Can you sell me on Danny Wolfe?
Oh, easily. Yeah. What do you want to know?
Just tell me. I'm not saying that.
He is an elite passer for his size. Yep. I see his shot. I think that he overall made Michigan a better basketball team when he was on the floor. I think that he is more physical than people think. I think some of the erraticness, and if you see the turnover percentages, I don't penalize guys for breaking eggs when they're making omelets. If it's, you know, Trae Young has had a high turnover percentage or a high turnover rate at times. If guys are being very creative, I don't worry so much about that. Jakachonis had that at different points this year. I think if you're going to ding him, you're going to say, okay, maybe I don't believe the shot is going to be there. And then you're just sort of this, you know, you're this big forward who can't leverage his strength, but or he's about 6'10", 6'11", I guess. But I do believe in his shot. Like, you know, in the positive.
How come? That's where I'm not connecting there. In his career in college, 64.6% from the free throw line, 33.6% from three, very up and down, very inconsistent. Where is your belief versus my lack of belief?
Well, he was 71% last year at Yale. And if you just, I look at his shot, yeah, 34.5 to me feels like a more indicative number for him. I just feel like his shot's going to get to the point where it's good enough. Is he going to be like jacking them all the time? Is he going to be, you know, a legit all the time stretch four? I think he's going to be a good enough shooter to get by. I think if you put him next to like a legitimate, you know, big rim protector, which, you know, they had at Michigan, I think the passing is special. I think he's more physical around the rim than he gets credit for. And I think if you take those two things and you believe in the shooting, which I do, Yeah, I mean, that's enough. That's enough for me. I can see. I have him pulled up here. I have Danny Wolf at 12.
On your board?
Yep.
I can't get there, Kyle. I can't get there. I mean, I think this is one of those guys where it's kind of as you described with Jace and Jeremiah Fears, like having them in the 20s. They're not going to get to that point. So somebody else would take them before they're the best player available on your board. But Danny Wolf, I'm happy to be wrong. Like that he's just that type of player where it's like, if I'm wrong, I'll live with the consequences and I'll still sleep, have a full night of sleep with Danny Wolf is how I feel with him as a prospect. I think he's fun. He's exciting. He's a joy to watch play basketball, like watching a near 7-footer handle the way he does and pass the way he does. He's just straight up fun. But I just worry too much about the shooting. And you're right, like what you said about the turnovers. Like I think I'm a little bit more concerned than you might be. Sometimes I wonder, is it too much style, not enough substance with Danny Wolf? But he's undoubtedly fun. And I hope he's great. I want
too much
him to
fun,
be really-
not enough function, huh? I was gonna mention his assist percentages for his position are through the roof, and then his assist usage 94th percentile for guys at his spot. So
no surprise.
He's a little friskier, I think, around the rim as a help defender than people give him credit for. Same thing with Con Knipple. You know, it's the white guy thing there, but I just think. I like Danny Wolf, man. I think it's going to work. And I just watch him shoot a basketball in a vacuum. I know that's an old school scouty thing to say, but I don't think it's broken. I think he can figure it out. We've seen worse shooters do more with less. And I think he has a good enough foundation that I feel good about it.
Last question for you. Where's Ace Bailey ending up on your final big board?
I'm going to spoil the whole thing. He's at 6 right now. I'm getting ready to send it off. So we'll see if that changes. That is more me betting on the, I feel like the middle outcomes are higher for Con and VJ and Trey for me. Like I feel like the simple idea of what Trey is going to be, I know he's going to be a movement shooter if he buys into that. If he gets in his head, he's going to be, you know, I have to be a primary pound the ball a lot kind of guy. That worries me. But if he just takes the course of trading on what works for him, good. Ace, though, that's, you know, to use that as a springboard for Ace, I was saying this to Zach Lowe, that if we're reading the tea leaves based on what his camp is saying about what he wants in his development, that concerns me a little bit. Steve Peichel was on with Russillo and was saying that he thought he was a good passer and read the floor a lot. I was like, I understand why you would say that if you coached him, but I watched Ace and, you know, it was kind of granted that Rutgers team. You know, he had to score the ball, but he also could have made them a better basketball team by passing it, you know, whenever he drew two. So it's just, I have concerns about that. Right now he's at 6. He absolutely could be an elite. If he wants to be a shot maker and a switchable defender, he could become that. But, you know, at this point, that's a representation of my confidence in that.
Kyle, appreciate you joining me today, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Kyle and John for joining me on today's episode talking KD and NBA draft. I'll be back again on Sunday night with Tom Haberstroh discussing Game 7 of the NBA Finals, Thunder Pacers. I can't wait. I just hope we get a thriller. I hope we get something memorable, one of those games that just goes down to the wire. We get some highlights and moments that we remember forever. If it's a blowout, it's a blowout. We'll be live either way. After the game, you'll have that podcast in your feed overnight. Look forward to that. Thanks to the whole crew for producing today's episode on this Sunday afternoon. We'll be back again Sunday night. Talk to you soon.